The designated hour having arrived, I call to order this regular meeting of Ansel Clink's Quorum Forum podcast, the podcast local governments need to do business. In the chair, it's me, Daniel J. Bolin. On the agenda today, we're live at the Illinois Association of Park Districts, Illinois Park and Recreation Association, Soaring to New Heights Conference 2020. We're at a special dinner hosted by Ansel Clink for our dozens of park clients at the Chicago Children's Museum, which I am relieved to discover is a museum for children and not a museum of children. There are fortunately no children trapped behind glass in exhibits, not yet anyway. It's just a fun place for kids, which after hours hosts fun events for grown-ups like us, including grown-ups like us that want to record podcasts on the top of a model fire truck. This is a I don't know, like a 20-foot fire truck play set with real working lights and sirens. We'll hear those later, I'm sure. But we're opening up for public comment today for folks to talk about their park conference experience. But first, let's take the roll. Behind the glass for our protection, it's Engineer Rick. We have a quorum. It is a regular meeting, so we have to have a public comment. First up, you might remember him from our most recent podcast. He admitted to stealing our microphone, Mr. Microphone, which we've been chasing after for months, for longtime listeners would know, because this is a true crime podcast. We're going to get to the bottom of this crime. He's back because he's talking at the park conference. Adam Simon is here.
Hi, Dan.
Adam, what are you doing here?
I am pretending to be a firefighter.
Yeah, that's you look great in this hat. We've got a real axe that you're carrying around, and not to mention there's passersby shouting at you.
Yeah, this takes me back to my childhood when I used to watch firefighter shows on TV, like One Adam 12.
Yeah, for the listener, Adam is a very fit individual, looks just like you might imagine a firefighter would look on whatever television shows or calendars you might have in your home.
I might not be in shape, but I am a shape.
Yep, that is and you're here to help park folks get in shape for their park operations. What are you talking about at the park conference?
So I'm fortunate enough to get to teach two seminars tomorrow.
What you got?
I have Not in My Park, with an exclamation point.
Not in my park!
Not in my park! So that I'm the grumpy old man complaining about smoking and cannabis in the park, parades and assemblies in the park, guns in the park, all kinds of controversial uses.
That sometimes the members of the public like to use park facilities for.
Yes.
I also talked about cannabis this morning, talking about we've plugged it on the podcast many times. Get the 420 on the impact of recreational cannabis or marijuana for your agency. We had a great session this morning talking about a packed room of like 150 park folks. We're very disappointed with the words I had to say.
So now that recreational cannabis or marijuana is legal, mm-hmm. This is the first statewide conference where it's been legal.
That's true.
Did you give out samples this morning?
There were many people that were disappointed. The other half of the audience that hates this new law, were not asking me for that. They were asking me for the number of their state legislator, but that's fine. The interesting challenge I found for the way that the new law is drafted is about how prohibiting use in parks is one thing. You've got using cannabis in a public place. That's easy. Mm-hmm. Anywhere somebody else can you could be seen by others. But also any property managed by a unit of local government, not to mention parks managed by a unit of local government. They added that in the recent trailer bill. One thing they didn't think about was what the definition of unit of local government is. And it doesn't include park districts. So I asked everyone, does this mean that you can use cannabis in all park district bathrooms where you can't be seen by others? But fortunately, there's a part of the law that lets persons in lawful possession of property, the law shouldn't be construed to require you to allow that use on your property. But this is one of the reasons we're just laying back and relying on the way that the state law is drafted might not be the best approach of coming out and affirmatively stating your policy view as allowed by the law. Might be a good idea if you're concerned about cannabis use on your park property.
Definitely. Some other questions that we've received from park district clients is whether or not you can possess marijuana while you're in a park. And the law doesn't have any prohibition specifically about carrying it with you while you're in a park.
Right.
In fact, the only rules in the law about the type of container that you're supposed to carry it around in apply in cars.
Right.
You know, certainly you're only allowed to keep marijuana in a car in a sealed, odorless container, but it doesn't say anything about whether you're walking through a park, if you can have it in a baggie or any other type of container.
Yeah, it's kind of more like tobacco than it is like alcohol. Because of the preemption provisions in the cannabis law, you have to make your possession regulations consistent with that. You can obviously prohibit alcohol in your parks or whatever, and the Liquor Control Act says so.
Yeah.
But unless you adopt appropriate local regulations. You don't have that kind of authority for cannabis possession. You can prohibit it in accordance with state law, which is over the possession limit, underage possession of cannabis, underage possession of cannabis paraphernalia. But I had a lot of upset park folks wondering about, so you mean they could just wave this cannabis around? Like, theoretically, maybe.
They can wave it in the air like they just don't care.
Right. Can people walk around and show off packs of cigarettes? Like, yes, they can. So that's kind of the way I think about it. But
they can be impaired. However, if they're too impaired, certainly they would engage in disorderly conduct.
Exactly. If there's existing criminal laws that are unrelated to cannabis and park regulations that you probably have that'll get the job done, that don't impede on people's cannabis rights under the Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act. People are passing by and saying hello. This is a exciting event here at the park conference. Definitely some challenges with cannabis to be dealt with.
Sure.
What else are you talking about at the park conference?
So other topics that we'll talk about in the Grumpy Old Man seminar is get off my lawn. We'll talk about drones and whether park districts can regulate residents using drones in the parks.
Yep.
And that's sort of a hybrid answer because the FAA has exclusive jurisdiction in the manner by which people operate drones, but park districts have authority to decide whether or not drones can be used over their property at all.
Right.
Park districts have the authority to say where and when, but they don't have authority to say how and why, to sort of to split up those questions. So we'll talk about that. Other than that seminar, I'm also going to get to talk with the finance director from Naperville Township, Sue Stanish. We're going to do Park District Finance 101.
Yeah.
And teach new commissioners about the financial ins and outs for park districts and other recreational organizations.
So you're covering the basics, classics every year. Anything new this year to know about property taxes we've been hearing about from Springfield? They're going to fix them.
Well, they've promised to fix them. When the General Assembly approved the proposition to go on the ballot to ask the citizens of Illinois to approve a graduated income tax, they promised to offset that increase with lower property taxes. So they've impaneled an 88-member committee to study how to reduce property taxes.
That's a lot of members. Are you on it?
Not on it. No, they didn't ask.
It seems like everybody else is. So,
yeah.
But anyways, so what happened?
So they actually haven't given up. They haven't published their final report. The law creating the panel indicated they were supposed to publish a final report by December 31st of 2019. And so far, all we have is a leaked draft of the report that has been distributed through the press. It's gotten mixed reviews. In my opinion, it's incomplete. It doesn't really contain a fiscal analysis about how the ideas they have will actually impact property taxes. One of the things they go back to is the old hacksaw about freezing property taxes. And so one of the things we'll talk about in the session tomorrow is how a park district could survive in the event a park they enact a property tax freeze.
Right. Right. The weather is freezing here today, and I can tell you it sounds like a property tax freeze would be similarly unpleasant.
It would be treated similarly.
And not fix the underlying problem, I would think.
No.
But it sounds like you're not surprised that 88 people couldn't agree on one report.
Not at all.
Well, that sounds like a great session. Folks will be fortunate to attend. You can have materials from these sessions available on AnselGlink.com and the Resource Center.
You know we will.
I encourage people to check that out. Any other thoughts about the park conference? Anything else from your speeches? Your favorite park district memories? park conference memories? What you enjoy about the park conference generally?
All of my favorite park conference memories are at the Ansel Glink Park District dinner.
That's where we are again today. This time at the Children's Museum, parked atop perched atop a fire truck, and I'll let you unless you got anything else to say to the folks, I'll let you go play with the lights and sirens.
Woohoo!
Thanks, Adam. Enjoy the rest of the park dinner, and we'll be back with more public comment on Ansel Glink's Quorum Forum podcast. And we're back, Ansel Glink Quorum Forum podcast, public comment here at the Ansel Glink Park District conference dinner. We're still perched atop the fire truck at the Chicago Children's Museum. We are joined here now by my fellow panelist and colleague and friend, Matt DiCiani, from this morning session, which we already talked a little bit about. Get the 420 on the impact of recreational marijuana for your agency. Matt, welcome.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Matt, this morning session, it was packed, like 150 folks, lots of a great audience, lots of good, interesting questions, a standing ovation at the end. At least I count it as a standing ovation when people get up and leave at the end of the session.
Yeah, I count that too.
What were some of the highlights for you today?
People were really knowledgeable about the cannabis law and the changes in it. A lot of the questions we got showed that people had thought a lot about the issue. I think the biggest thing for us that, or at least that I was trying to get across, was that employers need to update their personnel policies to deal with the changes in the cannabis laws, because if you don't have an updated personnel policy, you don't have a good drug and alcohol policy, you could find yourself liable pretty easily for taking disciplinary action against an employee.
That was a big message, a big take-home point. One of the items on our to-do list, our cannabis response checklist for parks, available at the Resource Center at AnselGlink.com. One of the more interesting questions, I thought, like you said, the audience is very knowledgeable and was talking about the impacts of the Right to Privacy Act and how you cannot discriminate against most employees for cannabis use, product lawful under state law, during non-call and non-working hours. And one of the interesting questions was, oh, gee whiz, I'm a, high-up employee in the agency, I'm on call all the time.
Yeah.
I answer emails in the middle of the night. Does that mean I can't use cannabis?
I know.
What do you think of those questions?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I've actually gotten asked that a few times by clients, and my answer is I don't think a court's going to look favorably upon a policy that categorically prohibits an employee from using cannabis outside of work because they're always on call. That goes against the spirit of the Right to Privacy in the Workplace Act, which I think is going to be broadly construed
in favor of cannabis.
In favor of cannabis, yes.
That's why they adopted it.
Right, exactly, yeah. Another thing you want to remember is you don't want your agency or your company to be the test case. Plaintiffs' attorneys are going to be chomping at the bit to go after employers who violate the Right to Privacy in the Workplace Act, because a lot of employers don't even know about it or understand it really well. So why make yourself the test case by aggressively enforcing your cannabis policy? I mean, why not just let your employees use cannabis outside of work, like the law allows. But if you have to call them in, make it a requirement that they tell you whether they've been using cannabis or alcohol or sleeping pills or anything else that might impair them.
Right. Think of it like alcohol. One of the reminders that I offered to everyone, like, this isn't new. Like, there's impairing products out there, and not to mention the medical cannabis law has been around for like 5 years, and obviously the use is going to be much broader under the adult use cannabis law. Should they ever produce enough cannabis to meet the demand?
Yeah, right. I know.
But so yeah, so some of these questions are really theoretical until like really the. They've been selling a lot, but like there's still a lot of unmet demand out there, it sounds like, from based on media reports. But any other highlights, questions that you found were interesting today?
Another interesting question, and I've gotten this a lot, is we have employees that are in these safety sensitive positions. They're lifeguards, they're babysitters, they're people who are responsible for other people's lives. You're saying that these people in these safety-sensitive positions can use cannabis outside of work?
Well, that's what the law seems to say.
That's what the law seems to say, exactly. You may disagree with the law, but that's what it says. Now there are some exceptions to that. Safety-sensitive positions that
police, fire, paramedic,
safety-sensitive positions that require CDLs. Those are all, you can prohibit them from using cannabis outside of work. But if you're concerned about your lifeguards coming into work impaired, then you need to have solid, reasonable suspicion policies in place, solid procedures in place to examine your employees to make sure that they're not impaired. That's how you deal with your concerns about safety-sensitive employees.
They need to be safe at work.
Yeah, right.
There's talk about like some agencies are going to take the risk and adopt policies that prohibit those kinds of safety sensitive positions that are not in the statute,
right,
from using during off call and non working hours. But that's a calculated risk based on the penalties in the Right to Privacy Act, the actual damages, and the attorney's fees that you'll have to pay. But some people think that's a risk that they're willing to take. But they should fully understand the risk before they do it.
Yeah, I mean, being a lawyer that does a lot of litigation, boy, I think you want to avoid litigation at all costs.
It's a pain.
It's expensive. It's stressful. You know, I just don't think it's worth it to set yourself up to be sued, to risk being sued. You know, especially when the benefit you're going to get is, in my opinion, minor.
That they weren't using cannabis when they weren't at work.
Right. Exactly. Right. I mean, I don't see what huge benefit you're getting from that. And the cost just seems so enormous to me.
Yeah, the law is written that way. Of course, things could change. We expect a cannabis trailer bill every year for the rest of our lives. They might do things like in other states that exempt more safety-sensitive positions. But for now, it's really focused on police, fire, paramedics, a limited universe of employees that you can prohibit use outside the non-call, non-working hours.
Dan, just to echo what you said, I was at a speech at the Union League Club a couple of weeks ago given by Representative Kelly Cassidy. She was one of the main sponsors of the cannabis bill, and I asked her, I said, you know, do you see this law changing? And she said, oh yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot of trailer bills that are going to be, every year there's going to be trailer bills that are introduced. And she also said, you know, there's trailer bills to amend the Liquor Control Act, you know, the law that...
Every single year.
Every year. So this law is going to be changing. Let me put in a plug for our labor and employment blog, The Workplace Report at Ansel Glenk. We have been covering the cannabis issues very closely, and we will continue to do so.
Workplacereport.anselglenk.com. Some people make it their homepage. You could do that, too.
I would suggest doing that.
Matt, we're deeply appreciative you were here today. Any favorite park conference memories? Favorite parts of going to the park conference every year? Obviously, this banging Ansel Glenk dinner, which has really picked up steam since we first started recording. Listeners probably experienced a jarring increase in background volume.
Yeah. My favorite park conference memory, you know, watching, sitting here and looking at Dan Bolin in a children's fireman's costume is my favorite park district conference memory.
We're making them all the time, yeah. And that's why we're glad to have you here on Quorum Forum Podcast. Matt, thanks for stopping
by. All right, thanks, Dan.
And we'll be back with more public comment on Ansel Glenk Quorum Forum Podcast. And we're back, Ansel Glenk Quorum Forum Podcast. Woo! The top of the fire truck. Let's welcome Ashton Tug from Ansel Glenk Law Firm. Ashton, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dan. How are you?
Oh, boy. You are well-dressed as always in a sweater-suit combo that's just winning. I'm dressed in a child's fire coat that fits the fireman's fire truck scene that we have going up here.
Dan, but, to be honest with you, I take notes from you.
Oh,
you are the best dresser here at Ansel Glenk.
Oh, whoa, that's that is a hotly disputed point.
But it's a hot take, but I think it's the only take that we need to worry about for this.
Well, when I'm wearing the fireman's coat, absolutely correct.
We'll have to pass it around.
Oh, please hold. They're making announcements here. We'll be back on Quorum Forum Podcast. And we're back, Ansel Glenk Quorum Forum Podcast. Ashton Tunk is here. We took a quick break so he could compliment my jacket some more.
It was a very fruitful conversation.
Ashton, this is your first park conference in your life?
Yes, that is, Dan.
How is your life going?
My life's going well. I'm just happy for the opportunity to speak here at the conference this weekend.
What are you talking about?
So, Kurt Asperuth and I, we're doing a presentation on FOIA Jeopardy. It's going to be a very fun experience, considering how right now Jeopardy's been in prime time with the Greatest of All Time Challenge.
Do you consider yourself one of those? The greatest of all time of FOIA?
I'm working my way up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to be too cocky or anything, Dan, but I think eventually I could possibly take that title.
You know, that the ambition, that's what we like about you. What are you going to be talking about FOIA tomorrow? What are some of the highlights?
So, essentially, we're going to be talking about some of the more popular exemptions that that are applicable to some of the FOIA requests that, you know, park district officials and the like receive, as well as just typical standard routine, how to respond to a FOIA request, electronic communications.
That's a big one.
Laws of, you know, the FOIA affecting that. Also, we're in a general potpourri category. You don't know what we're going to throw at you, but it's still relevant.
Oh, well, that is neat. What are your favorite FOIA exemptions, Ashton?
You know, I got to say, any of the exemptions where you sort of have to, they're more subjective in nature, you know. No, because when you think about it, Section 7 of FOIA... Are a little more, you know, they're permissive in nature. I mean, there's nothing that's exactly mandatory.
You never have to claim an exemption if you don't want to.
That's true, unless it's under Section 7.5. However...
Oh, the ones that are required by law?
The ones that are required by law, correct. But the thing is with 7.1c, it's very subjective. You really have to sort of dive in to the materials and see what the request is looking for, and then sort of see as far as any type of background information you can see, so that way you can make it a determination whether or not you want to claim that exemption.
What are some of those folks might be familiar with?
Well, really, 7.1c deals with some sensitive information. So typically, what you're going to want to focus on is, you know, for example, police reports are a huge one where 7.1c applies. You want to make sure that if there's any information out there that could affect any, let's say, a complainant, a witness, anything like that. You want to make sure that you're not giving out information that really someone who's requesting it could use for some, you know, bad purpose.
Can I get a witness?
I mean, it depends. I think the best, you know, answer in the law is, Dan, is that it depends unless it's under Section 7.5.
Oh, hey. The FOIA Jeopardy. This podcast listeners, this FOIA Jeopardy session happened in the recent past. So nobody's gonna know that you gave away any answers to important questions. What are some of the highlights you're gonna cover tomorrow?
Well, Dan, I don't want to spoil it too much. All I know is that, you know, there have been a lot of amendments to FOIA this past year.
What are some of the big ones?
I would say especially things that affect local governments at the core. There was a new exemption that was added that really takes away the whole Section 7.1c exemption, especially if they want to disclose credit card numbers, any type of identifiers in any of the public expenditure records. That was one that was just added within the last couple months. Now, at the end of the day, you still have to, you know, any public records that deal with public expenditures are still, you know, disclosable under FOIA. But especially certain things that would cause some type of identity theft at the local government level, you can now exempt expressly under one of the new exemptions. You don't have to rely on some of those other exemptions, which really didn't say that you can do, say you can use that, like 7.1c, for example, but now you can expressly just say this is, you know, exempt under, I think it was 7.1kk, if I recall.
KK. KK. It's important not to give away the park district's banking information, if at all possible.
Of course, so, yes. That's definitely a huge thing. We don't want...
Right. So that's a good change in the law. We don't always get those for local governments, but we cheer for them when we do. Any other big highlights for you tomorrow, do you think?
To be honest with you, Dan, Kurt and I sort of want to keep it secretive. I don't want to spoil too much for our attendees tomorrow, especially if they.
You're very cagey. And I get it. I appreciate where you're coming from. Tell us some of your favorite things about your very first park conference. What are you always going to remember besides podcasting from the top of a fire truck.
Well, that is in itself very memorable, Dan. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the big takeaways from this weekend. But otherwise, I'm excited to speak in front of a bunch of great individuals who are very passionate about local government, especially at the Park District level. This being my first conference,
yeah.
and especially one that I'm speaking at, I think it's going to be a time to remember.
I agree. But what I like about the park folks, not that our other clients aren't fun, but these folks have fun for a living and mm-hmm. help other people have fun.
That's true.
And, they're a fun group, and we're going to go join them at the Antelope Link dinner party. I thank you for stopping by.
Thank you, Dan. Dan, before we go, I know park districts especially excel in like intramural basketball leagues. I heard that was something that you might have done in college. Is that true?
No, I was in the Illinois basketball band, and
okay.
I cheered on many Fighting Illini teams to great success. They went to the national championship game in 2005, the year after I graduated undergrad. So I was not in the band that year, but okay. I got to root from the stands.
I just didn't know if you had tried out for the basketball team, because I would say you're 6'1". You can definitely play professionally, I think, if you pursued that.
As we've talked about on this podcast many times, I'm very athletic visually in this non-visual medium. You can imagine that I could dunk on anyone.
I would bet a lot of money on that, Dan.
So...
Well, thank you for having me, Dan.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to mention my Illinois Fighting Illini, first place at the moment in the Big Ten. God bless America. And we'll be back on Quorum Forum Podcast. And we're back, Antelope Link's Quorum Forum Podcast. I'm thrilled to have one of our number one fans of the podcast here. She is an administrative assistant. She'll tell me her correct title, but a doer of everything at Antelope Link Law Firm. Kathy Holmes is here. Welcome, Kathy.
Hi, Dan Boland. Thanks for letting me join you.
So we are here wrapping up what was a banging Antelope Link Park District Appreciation Dinner here at the Chicago Children's Museum, still hanging out at the top of the fire truck, still wearing the Chicago fire vest, jacket, equipment.
Right.
Paying tribute to our local government service people that keep us safe from fire and other hazards every day.
Oh, wow. People are coming down through the ropes.
There is a rope course, and guests are leaving through the rope course. I thought about doing that, but it said up only.
Well, there's someone going down.
Yeah, I think this is not a recommended or unusual behavior. But, Kathy, what'd you like about the park dinner, park conference?
It was fabulous. The venue's great. The food was great.
Meeting all the...
Great company.
Yeah,
hung out with a lot of great clients.
The park folks are fun, right?
Yeah, loads of fun.
They have fun for a living, and we enjoy having them. But one thing... As a Quorum Forum podcast fan, you've been waiting to do for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Was read one of the questions we get on the podcast.
Yeah, and, yeah.
I'd like to invite you to do that.
Sure.
If you'd like. This is public comment. We have to answer some. Well, we can, if we want to, answer some of the questions we get. Like to do that right now. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to help.
So let's take a look at this one. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. All right, so our park district has always required pre-employment drug screening for employees. With the Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act making cannabis legal after January 1st, can we continue to screen prospective employees for marijuana?
This is a great question. Matt DeCiani and I were talking about this earlier today, earlier on this podcast a little bit on adjacent topics, about our session at the park conference. Get the 420 on the impacts of recreational marijuana for your agency. Acute title session at that. So pre-employment drug screening is not recommended. One of the laws amended by the Act, which we've talked about many times on this podcast, is the Right to Privacy in the Workplace Act. Under that act, it is unlawful for an employer to refuse to hire because the individual uses lawful products off the premises of the employer during non-working and non-call hours. Because the new law legalizes the use of marijuana, you cannot make employment decisions for ordinary employees based on their use of that drug on their own time, especially before they work for you. The before they work for you is the most non-call and non-working hours they will ever have. So continuing to screen for marijuana during pre-employment drug tests may lead to the inference that hiring decisions were based on a positive result for cannabis. Pre-employment drug screening could arguably continue for special employees like police or CDL licensees, but employers can avoid risk by eliminating cannabis from their pre-employment screening. So, an important issue, the one that we covered at the Park Conference, we've covered on the podcast before, but it will continue to present challenges for local government employers and park district employers as cannabis continues to be introduced. Adult use cannabis continues to be introduced in Illinois. Next is the Department of Public Works. We've got some upcoming speeches that we'd like to tell you about. The 5th annual APA CMS bar exam planning law session, Dan Bolin, Greg Jones, and Christy Michelson from Ansel Glenk will be at the Haymarket Pub and Brewery on February 26, 2020 from 3:30 p.m. 5 p.m. It's a simulated law school experience that has a feel of pub trivia based on planning law cases. It's
loads of fun all the time, right?
Love
you guys
it.
Really do it up.
I look forward to it every year. A Twitter user recently called it the best CM credits of the year.
If you read it on the
CM credits for the planners, continuing certification.
Yeah,
business.
That's awesome.
And if you read it on Twitter, you know it's true. So before we go, I want to remind everyone to subscribe and leave us a review wherever podcasts are heard. We prefer good reviews. Email us your questions and show ideas at podcast@ansoclink.com. And leave us a voicemail, 312-604-9178. You can always visit us online at quorumforum.anselglink.com. Kathy, thank you for joining us here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Any final thoughts about the Park Conference before we go?
It's fabulous. Thanks, DJB.
Thank you for coming to Quorum Forum Podcast. Going to get a motion to adjourn.
Yes.
Second, all in favor, the ayes have it. We'll see you next time on Ansel Glenk's Quorum Forum Podcast.